Hey there, welcome back once again. You're still...
Shoot, I should know this. John Galloway.
And I'm still Christopher Harrison, and this is still MVC4 Web Applications.
And yes, we're quite jumpy by this point. So we are at the second to last portion for the day, right?
Yep.
So we are going to be talking about deploying an application. All day long, we've been talking about building an application. Now we're going to talk about deploying.
Yep.
And then after that, we are going to conclude. The last section is called conclusion.
Conclusion,
oddly enough.
Although we'll be doing some cool stuff. We'll talk about the future. We'll talk about SignalR.
Yeah, if you've been staying up all night and you're kind of like thinking about going to sleep, you're going to want to catch that last session because we're going to be showing off SignalR. We're going to be showing off Visual Studio 2013, MVC5.
Basically, it's just like your normal TV show. You save all the good stuff for the end so that way you make sure everybody comes back. So,
we should have a season, like a cliffhanger at the end for the season finale.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
So,
exactly. Yeah. Okay. So, in this session, we're going to be talking about deploying. And as a side say here, you know, deploying to Windows Azure. But really, the deployment stuff that I'm going to be showing you works for IaaS in general. So I want you to think about Windows Azure as a great resource. Now, I'm a technical evangelist on the Windows Azure team, disclosure there, but I like to think of Windows Azure as a great resource for web developers. And my thinking is, if you're a web developer and you always work on your desk and only rarely deploy stuff to the actual internet, you're not really doing that much web development. Part of the idea is putting your stuff on the actual web, right?
Right. Yes, and that's the phrase web developer.
Yes,
hey, clever.
Yes.
I see what you did
see
there.
I thought about that for a while.
Yeah.
So the idea is Windows Azure has a lot of, will give you free websites. You can get 10 free websites. Now, recently, they added in, you get free 20 megabyte databases, which is plenty for, you know, playing with a small, simple website. You can scale up, of course, and you start paying money if you want to scale up, but there's a lot that you can do for free. Also, if you have MSDN, you can get a lot of free benefits with that, like actually tons of benefits off of that.
Yep.
So we're going to be talking about, you know, deploying to Windows Azure in this session, but I want to point out a lot of the deployment features will work on any other site host you use. So if we go to the slides here, this is deploying a web app. So we'll talk about, you know, some of the things. We've got dependencies. There are issues you need to think about with different hosting environments. One thing you pointed out to me before, Christopher, is it's just nice that everything really kind of works on Azure, you know?
Yeah.
If you think about the idea that it's hosting that's run by the same company that makes ASP.NET, they kind of make sure it works well for you.
So, you would figure.
Yeah. So this is what you need to run. You need, ASP.NET 4. You need MVC4 runtime. What's nice is that this can be bin deployed now.
Yes.
So it doesn't need to be, you know, GAC installed on the box and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. One of the things that I want to mention, I've dealt with a lot of different third-party hosting companies, and one of the things that I found pretty consistently is that they don't keep their servers up to date. So as new features, as new cool things are added into .NET, into ASP.NET, there's, generally speaking, a lag time. Sometimes of several months before a particular hosting company might decide, hey, yeah, we'll actually go ahead and install this. So having the bin deploy makes things much easier. So even if my hosting company hasn't decided, hey, we want to natively host this yet, with a lot of the functionality, with a lot of the features, I can bin deploy it. So even if they haven't updated their servers yet, I can still take advantage of the latest and greatest that's been made available.
Great. Yep. So then, you know, it's recommended. You actually could technically deploy an MVC app without a database and any framework, but it's probably are going to want some sort of database going on there. Yeah. Okay. So deploying to a single server, actually pretty easy. You know, you can, there's several different ways. You can even, like, you could FTP deploy or whatever.
Yep.
I'm going to be showing web deploy, which is built into Visual Studio.
Right. Yep.
And so really, you know, you copy up, you create an application and you copy the files up.
Yeah, so you have to set up your application inside of IIS, configure whatever permissions it is that you need, and then go ahead and deploy out from there.
Yeah. Yep. Now, this is the easy case, deploying to a single server.
Which,
right?
Generally speaking...
Generally, that doesn't happen. Say, for instance, if your name rhymed with Schmachel Schmappel, and you had really a very popular blog post that we referenced earlier, you'd want to be able to scale that out when it got hit by a lot of people.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yes.
So in that case, you want to be able to run the same site on multiple web servers, and they need to stay in sync and update the database and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
So talking about multi-server farms, this is where you need to actually, be a software engineer a little bit and, kind of think of some things. So a few things are, one, you need to get that machine key in sync, right?
Yeah, because the that validation token, again, we want to make sure that it's coming back to the system that it came from. And the way that that's done is by using a hash and by using the machine key for that. So if the request comes in, somebody fills out the form, they hit submit, and then it comes back to a different server in the farm, it could be completely valid, but it's going to be kicked back because the key was different on that different server. So one of the things that you could do with a web farm is you could set affinity so that way if I connect to a server, it sends me back a page, I fill out my form, I hit submit and I send it back, that it will go right back to that same server. I can set affinity, but it sort of defeats the whole purpose of having a web farm. The whole purpose is that it doesn't matter which system it is that that I want. So I need to make sure that the machine key has been updated across the board. There actually is an MSDN article, and you can go in and Bing this, that will walk you through everything and how to go in and set up the machine key across the servers in the farm. But again, that's yet something else that I have to do.
Right.
And beyond that, you'll also notice that I need to make sure that my application is set up across all servers on the farm. I have to make sure that my application pool is set up across all servers on the farm. And if all of a sudden we decide that I want to use a different account to connect out to the database, and we've been using one on an application pool, now I'm going to have to run around to all the servers in the farm and update that yet again. That's just an awful lot of work.
Yep. So I know that's a perfect lead into the next slide, so keep that in the top of your mind. One other thing that I just want to say before I forget here is, you also, for your application to run on multiple servers, you don't want to be like relying on session state, things like that, right? So you need to, it's best to, when you develop your application, develop it with the thought that it could run on multiple servers.
Exactly, yeah. You want to offload that session state out to a database, out to a state server. Mm-hmm. Again, yet something else that I now have to address.
So you were talking about, setting everything up and scaling up is a little difficult.
Yep.
So the idea is hopefully Windows Azure is a lot simpler for scaling, right? So the idea is if you decide you need to scale up your server, you slide a slider and it automatically provisions more sites for you, and they automatically all work together.
Exactly. One of the things that I want to mention right away, and I'm speaking as somebody who is an independent contractor, so not a Microsoft employee, that for me, for Azure, the biggest thing that I learned right away, and this helped sort of fall everything into place, make everything fall into place, is the fact that the skills that you have apply directly into Azure. So when it comes time to work with your database, if you've created queries inside of SQL Server Management Studio, it's going to be the exact same tool inside of Azure. If you've created now our MVC sites and you want to deploy them out, it's the exact same regardless if you're deploying out to IIS or if you're deploying out to Azure. So again, it's not a brand new environment that you have to learn. Obviously, there are some things that are going to be particular to Azure that you do need to pick up, but it's not a completely new skill set. Mm-hmm. It builds on top of what you already know.
So that's a really key point, and something I forget about. We're going to be talking mostly about Windows Azure websites.
Right.
And Windows Azure websites is kind of a nice, simple, shared hosting model, and you can scale it up. But this is not the, if you've done some Azure development before and had your mind blown by things like, cloud services and, the whole kind of configuring, learning to be an Azure expert just to use it, that's not what we're doing here. So the idea is now that we're going to be creating a simple site and hosting it on Azure, and we don't have to do anything to change our site to work with that.
Yep.
So we can take advantage of Azure services if we want to, caching or content store, using storage or VMs or whatever, but we don't have to, right?
Exactly.
So this is the list of steps on this slide. These are the things that I will forget at least one of. So these are the things that we're going to do in order to get our site up onto Azure. So just remember that, and then you can laugh when I forget it. One last final thing before we go into the demo is that they're configuring your handling configuration between your local dev box and production and possibly other servers along the way, staging and testing and all that can be tricky. So you, when you're working locally, you may want to allow, you may want to bypass authentication or make everyone an admin or whatever it is.
Right.
You may want to have some testing data. You may want to hit a testing database. You may want your credit card validation to allow some test numbers, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. When you deploy to production, you obviously want your, you know, locked down production, you know, ready to go settings. So this, the recommended way to do this is using configuration transforms. So when I jump into the demo, the first thing I'm going to show you is these configuration transforms.
Yep.
All right, let's go. So so the idea with config transforms is you, if you expand out your web config, and this may come as a shock to some people who have never noticed this, but the web
config. That actually
config,
hid from me for months before I noticed that.
Yeah, yeah, it's interesting, right? So here's this web config, and I can expand it. So if I go in here and I expand that out, I've got two transforms on top of this. Mm-hmm. So I've got my web config, and this has all my settings. Yep. And then these are my overrides. So I have web.debug.config, and this says that when I'm running locally, actually it doesn't have any configuration set up there. But I could go in and I could say use my, you know, say my local database, you know, something like that. When I go to production, one of the things you'll always want to do is you will not want to run in debug in production.
Of course.
Right. So, but that's a common thing. People will set their configuration to debug mode locally. They'll set that to debug and forget to unset it in production.
Exactly. Yeah.
So the idea with this this transform is that this will automatically, when you build in release mode, it will remove that attribute.
Exactly. So if I can turn you into a code monkey this time. So if you scroll back up, go ahead and uncomment the connection string. So take away the two ticks in the angle bracket on 16, move that up to 10. Perfect. So you'll notice right there the connection strings, and you'll notice the add section. So if you take a look, you'll notice name equals, connect string equals, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. And then if you keep going all the way off to the right, you'll notice, oh, they don't have the type. That's fine. So, but anyway, your normal connection string, the name, the connection string. And this is one of the biggest that when I'm doing development locally, I want to develop against a local or against a dev database. I move to production, and now I want to make sure that I'm on the production database. But I want to use the exact same name. So all I have to do is inside of, say, my debug or inside of the main web.config, have the connection string pointing to my dev SQL server.
Yep.
And then in production, I can now point to my release SQL server, which you'll notice is very creatively named as release SQL server. I love that.
Yeah.
And then you'll notice the transform and the locator. So the transform is, this is the changes that we want to make. The change that we want to make is we want to update the attributes. You'll also notice the locator, and that's how we want to find this particular tag. The way that we're going to find it is based on the name. So we just need to make sure that the name MyDB exists inside the web.config, and then it will be replaced on a release build with that connection string that you see right there.
Perfect. All right. So I'm going to undo that. So that, but that is an important thing to know, and this is actually supported in Azure, that you can go in and make these settings inside the Azure console. Yep. So I am going to, I'll close these out, and I'm going to jump into the Azure console. So this is, I went to manage.windowsazure.com, and I'm just going to create a new one. So I'm going to create a new website, so I'll say new, and I want to custom create. Now, I could just do quick create, and that'll create a basic, simple website. I'm going to do custom create, and the reason is I want to create one which has a database as well. And I'm actually going to spin up a database server as part of this. So I'm going to throw in a few numbers here because you have to have, they have to be unique. So I'm pretty sure nobody's used that before. They could have. And I want to create a free 20 megabyte SQL database because I like free. And then I'm going to say okay.
By the way, just going back real quick, you'll notice the region there. That allows you to choose, again, you know, what region that's going to be hosted inside of. So if you're expecting, you know, European clients, if you're expecting Asian clients, then you can go ahead and choose the region that's going to be closest to where your clients are going to be.
Yep. And that gets to be one of those things where you can optimize quite a bit. You could have multiple local ones that, you know, you farm out to for different regions worldwide, and then, you know, you can have database synchronization and things like that. So you can definitely take this quite a bit further. So I'm going to, this is my database name, and I'm going to create a new SQL server. And my server login name should, of course, be SA. No, it should not. So I'm going to call it MVA user, and I'll make a password. Let me see. I think I already got that wrong. It's kind of finicky on the password requirements, which is great. So it cannot be ASDF, ASDF.
It has to be ASDF, ASDF, ASDF.
Right, exactly.
Yes, yes.
So it requires a few things, uppercase, lowercase, and and stuff like that. And so again, I could pick any region, but I want my database to be in the same region as my site. That's going to work better for everybody. So now what's happening is it's creating that website and it's creating the database. And you can see these things spinning along. Usually this happens in seconds, like it's blazingly fast. I'm creating a database as well, so sometimes that can take longer.
And let's just stop and think about for just a second here what we're doing here.
It's pretty insane.
Yeah, it really is. That what we've just done here in just those couple of mouse clicks is we've deployed out a brand new web server, we've stood up and deployed out a brand new SQL server with a database, all in just a couple of clicks. And you know, it's taking a few seconds to do its thing. But think about, and I don't care how good your scripting is, think about how long that would take back in your environment. And John was able to do that while talking, just going click, 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 and done in a minute and a half.
Yep.
You know? And at that point, you basically just pull the old Scotty, which you say, no, this is going to take me an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And then, you know.
Go to lunch.
Exactly. Go to lunch.
Okay. So now this is spun up. So I click on here, and I can do quite a bit. So I could go in and monitor it, you know. I can see CPU usage, which of course is none at this point. But I can go in and configure. I can also scale. And so this is one of those things where once the site is running, I may start getting a lot of use. And I can actually, I could switch it to different. I could switch from free, which is just like a shared, you know, small little thing. And I could switch up to different levels. And I could run on, say, standard and crank up a bunch of high-end instances and really.
Why don't you go ahead and I'm going to, again, make you my browser monkey. So go ahead and hit standard here. Mm-hmm. Because there's just a couple of really cool things that that are worth pointing out. And again, going with a name that rhymes with Rachel Appel and her server issues, there's a couple of things that Azure can help out with that you'll notice, first of all, down towards the bottom on the capacity instance size, that by default, it's going to start off with that one core, 1.75 gigs. If you drop that down, again, you know, let's talk about simplicity here. I want two cores. I want four cores. I hit a drop down, choose whatever it is that I want, and away I go.
Yep.
You'll also notice that you can choose how you want to handle your scaling. So if you want to scale up when during particular times when things get very busy, again, you know, your blog happens to be mentioned while somebody's doing an MBA session, and now you want to be able to scale,
or a different, you know, schedule thing could be like a store. You may have certain peak times, right?
Exactly.
You want to scale up and down during those times.
Exactly. So if you go back to the page there.
Yeah, to which page?
That one right there. And if you scroll down.
Yeah.
You'll also, of course, you've got the number of instances that you can spin up. And again, you know, going back to the whole server farm, I need multiple servers in a farm. I have to run around to all of them. Yeah, here I just have to move a slider to the right. That's it.
One other neat thing is this autoscale. So I can set it to CPU and I actually get a range. So I can say I want, well, obviously minimum of one, but I could say I want a minimum of two servers at all time and a max of five. And then I can say keep my CPU in between these ranges. So when it gets above 80, it's going to spin up a new instance and things like that.
Yep.
So, you know, really pretty slick. And I think my favorite part of all this is you can do this kind of thing hosting anywhere, but it's a phone call. and you know, a worrying time while you're waiting for them to bring the new server up and provision it, and then you need to change your code and all that. With this, you can on the fly, your site's running, you scale up, and all of a sudden a new server is online, and you did nothing, and there's no downtime, which is pretty magical.
Yeah.
All right, but I like free, so for now I'm going to go back to free. Is that all right? Okay, so I'm going to go. I don't even think I needed to change my. Maybe I'm spending money. Hopefully free is still free. Okay, so I'm going to say okay to a lot of things I haven't read, and then I want to download my published profile. So the published profile is what contains all the information about this publishing stuff. So I'm just going to say save. And this is probably going to be in my downloads folder, perfect. And so now I'm going to go over into my site again, and I'm going to import that. And I'm going to import it, but then I'm going to remember one important thing after that. So see if I remember the important thing.
I know what the important thing is.
You do? Okay, so I'm going to import this. And what it did there is it loaded in all my information for deployment, including the password. So that published profile includes your password. So you want to secure that. You want to keep that safe. Once it's imported into Visual Studio, it's encrypted.
Yep.
And so you're all good there. But don't let your published settings just float around the world.
Yep.
So now, at this point, I could go through and I can start setting things up. I'm going to have problems, though, when I want to deploy my site. And the problem is that my database, I've used Code First Migrations, and it's telling me that's not a good idea.
Yep.
So we had people earlier ask about, you know, how do these seeds work? How do things work when you're, you know, over time? What if I change my model? What if I change things? And so the answer to that is Entity Framework Migrations. Now, again, if you're using Anhibernate or whatever other data access strategy, use something else. But if you're using Entity Framework Code First, it's going to require migrations to be set up before it'll deploy.
Exactly. So what the migrations will do is, as you make change, because as we all know, the only constant in software development is change. As you make change, we need to make sure that the target database is being updated. So again, going back to the example that we've been using up till now with our conference database, is let's say that later on we're going to add on attendees. You know, it'd be kind of nice, we're hosting a conference, might be nice to have some people attend. So we go in, we add that in. I want to make sure that that attendees table is going to be created for me. That's where Code First Migrations come into play. So all I have to do is once again focus in on just creating class. I go to the context, I add that in, and then when we deploy this out to Azure, the Code First Migrations will automatically set up that table. Now, if we can actually kick over to my screen real quick here, what I want you to notice, because we've been getting asked a lot of questions about this on the database, I want to show this real quickly on my system locally. You'll notice that I fired up the Management Studio. Now, I've been using we've been using Entity Framework Code First. And the default implementation is going to use LocalDB. Mm-hmm. And again, that drop database, drop create database always, is going to drop create the database inside of our LocalDB environment. So the moment that we touch that context for the first time, it will run that seed code. So it's already, of course, happened in my environment based on an earlier demo. And so you'll notice right over here, actually, two databases that have been created. Yep. We've got the ASP.NET database, and that's where all of our membership and profiles and everything else is going to go. And then you'll notice right here, there is that conference context database. Mm-hmm. If I open that up and I open up my tables, you'll notice that there are my comments, sessions, and speakers. And if we bust open, let's say for starters, our comments, you'll notice that it has, again using Code First, set up all of our columns to go along with it. Mm-hmm. And you'll also notice if I fire up a new query window, and I say, select everything from DBO comments. Let's make sure that I'm using the right database. There we go. Now, down here at the very bottom, you're going to notice that, sure enough, there is our data. So one of the cool things about that publish screen that John brought up is the fact that it's going to set up that database for us. Again, we're going to need the code first migrations, and that's where John was leading into. But yep, that will set up our database. So everything that we've done locally will now be deployed out to Azure. All we had to do, again, a couple of clicks, download some publishing settings. Bob's your uncle.
Yep, ready to deploy. Okay, so we're over on my application again here, if we can go back to my box. So what I need to do is turn on migrations. And it turns out that the way that the way that you do that is through the Package Manager console. So Package Manager console is it was originally added to Visual Studio as a way to manage, if you want to install NuGet packages, you can right click and say manage packages, manage NuGet packages. But you can also say install-package jQuery or whatever, and it'll pull it in and you see all the stuff go by. So in order to enable migrations, I need to, in the Package Manager console, I say enable migrations. I think I typed it wrong. Migrations. Let's type migrations. Okay. So what it's going to do is create a migrations folder, and it's going to create configuration for me. Okay. So here is my configuration. And this is very simple. This is just saying, here is a new seed method that's going to work with migrations. So I've actually deleted your seed method out of mine. And good. This is where you could go in and do all that other stuff if you wanted to. And this is a migrations-friendly seed method,
yes,
if that makes sense.
Yeah, by the way, just to highlight that one more time, that if you remember back to earlier this morning, I went in, put that into my global ASIX and said, never do this, because again, it'll work fine for our environment. You want to make sure when you head out to production that you don't have something that's going to say, drop the database. Again, just a little tip from me to you.
Yeah, yep. Okay, so now we've got migrations enabled. So now the next thing is I want to add my first migration. So again, migrations are a way of controlling, of keeping your model and your database in sync over time. Mm-hmm. So what that means is if we start out with, we just have speakers have a name and an email, and later we may need to track a speaker's, I don't know, contact phone. And so when we add that on, that needs to be added to the database and the model. And if the two of those are out of sync, if the model expects a phone number and it's not in the database, there's trouble, or vice versa, right? And so we need to keep those in sync. So I'm going to create a new, I'm going to say add migration, and I'll just call this one initial migration to have fun. The reason I'm calling it something goofy like that is to show that you can name it something that makes sense for you. And it filled that in, it came up with something that it was happy with. It changed it into a C# friendly class, right?
Yeah.
So here's what happens in this. Now notice what's going on. This is actual C# code that is creating my table in the database. So it says create table, which kind of makes sense. And then it's got all these things that it figured out from the attributes. Mm-hmm. So again, just like you showed in the database, this is showing this. This is also showing, here it came up with the foreign key, again, because you had that virtual setup.
Yep.
So this is a migration. Now, this hasn't actually been executed yet. So I have one more step left, and that is I need to say update database. And I'm going to add one other thing on here. I'm going to say verbose. The reason I'm doing that is because I want to actually see the SQL statement that's being created. And I appear to have messed something up. Cannot attach to the database because I think I deleted it. What's going to be the best thing for me to do here? I think what I need
bring
to
bring back up the page and let it create itself.
Yeah. So that was speakers, right?
Yeah, go to, I don't remember what you have on there. Yeah, you've got speaker. Yep.
There we go. Okay, so that doesn't exist because I don't have the. I told you I would fail this database, or fail this one. So I don't know if it created the database at that point. And I may, in the interest of time, I may just create a new dummy. Yeah. I think it's going to be quicker for me to just create a new application, a basic one.
Okay, yeah, go get them.
Because it says cannot attach the database. I deleted the database earlier because I wanted to simplify it. So that's what I'll do, just to keep it simple as can be. So I'm going to create, this is MVC application 5. I'm going to create a basic one. Let's see how fast I can do this. roughly 20 minutes left, no problem. Okay, so I'm going to, first I'll create a model. And we'll say that's a speaker.
Yep.
Okay, so. And the speaker, I forget what we want to have, so I'll just say prop.
Just give him a speaker ID and a name, yeah.
Okay. Prop, string, and name. All right, so now I want to scaffold out a controller for it.
Yep. So while you're going off and doing that and letting Visual Studio do your thing, one of the things that I've run into, because I personally use Azure now for hosting my websites and for handling my my databases, one of the things that I've run into a couple of times is I'll go in and I'll make a change, and I may have done something where maybe I took away a property, and maybe that was what I wanted to do, and I go ahead and I make my deployment, and now I'm getting an error message. One of the very cool things about the code migrations is even though, yes, if I go in and I make changes, it's automatically going to update my database, it's only going to do that if it is, in fact, safe. So if I get rid of a property, it's going to realize, hey, wait a minute, you're going to lose data if I put this into there. So going back to the update database, there's a couple of very big things that you can do. One is verbose, which is what we're going to be demoing here momentarily, which will actually show you all the SQL that's about to be executed. So if maybe you want to run that by yourself, maybe you want to go in and double check and see what's going on, you can do that through verbose. If you did remove that property, you did it on purpose, you know exactly what you're doing, and it's just time for that thing to go, then what you can do is say update database and then say force. Now, the one catch is when you go to do that on a remote server, you will need to specify both the connection type, which of course would be system data SQL client, and the connection string, and you can obtain the connection string from the Azure site.
Perfect. Okay. So, and actually, I'm going to use what you said as a bit of an excuse, because what we did was we were using initializers, and I created a database, and I went in and monkeyed with it, right? I went in and deleted the database, and I changed some code around, and I did all kinds of wacky stuff during lunch. So, and that really, you can't really track that well. So if you have migrations set up, it's able to move back and forth between these smoothly because it knows what you're trying to do a little
exactly.
bit. Exactly. Okay, so I have created this. I scaffolded out using the standard create, read, update, delete stuff. So this is this, and I've added a couple of speakers. So now I'm going to set up those migrations once again.
However did you come up with those names?
All right, so I'm going to say enable migrations. So this is, again, going to create that migrations, you know, the very simple migrations thing.
Yep.
So now I'm going to create my first migration, add migration.
By the way, while you're typing this in, there's been a couple of questions that have come in about, like, casing and things like that. One of the big things about that environment is it behaves a lot like PowerShell. So things like tab for your complete will work, and it is case insensitive on the commandlets inside of there.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Okay, so now finally I'm going to do update database. And I'm going to say verbose. And the point of this is I want it to actually show the SQL it's creating. And only because, you know, I want it'll actually show, you know, what SQL is going to be run for that. So running seed method, and we don't actually have anything to show here. Let me show, this is the initial and initial create. So there's initial create there. All right, so I think now I'm ready to go. So I've got migrations enabled, I've got my published profile that I downloaded earlier, and I'm just gonna import that into this site. So I'll go in here, import, validate that connection, that still works. And I'm going to say next. And now it'll say, you know, can you update this? Now, I don't need the default connection. Let me see. Yeah, so I'm going to say execute code first migrations because I do want that database to be deployed. So notice that's the difference. If I don't have code first migrations enabled, added to the project, and checked here, then I don't get any databases to deploy.
Yep.
If I go in here and check that box, then it's also going to publish this. Now for my first deployment, it's going to have to deploy everything. All the assemblies, all the JavaScript, all that stuff. So that takes a little bit of time. Not that long, it's actually pretty quick, but I mean, it takes a little time. What's nice is that you've got differential deployment for future publishes. So if I want to add something new in, I want to change something on a view, the next time I deploy is very quick, because all I need to do is, so here it is, it's already spun up, this is deployed now, this is up on the internet. So I can go in and I can say, you know, John, and it didn't keep in my, you know, local database. I could script that as part of my migrations or stuff to add in that seed data.
And all of this is now being hosted in Azure. So the code is running on Azure, the database is in Azure, everything is in Azure.
And could scale up or scale down or anything like that. So let's go back over here. If I look at my website, and I think if I update this, so now we can see already that we're starting to get some more, you know, we're starting to get some use out of that. And I can go in, I can say, yeah, let's scale this up now. You know, so I can say I would like to go to, you know, two or three instances. Can't do that on free. I need shared.
Yep.
And then I'll say I want, you know, two instances. So I say save. And it says you're changing a mode that might affect your bill. I like free. I told you I like free, Christopher.
You did.
Okay. So
but,
now
but on the plus side, again, just simply, you know, go in, move a slider.
Yep. So, and here this is. So this has been spun up and it's running, and now this is running on two boxes.
Yep.
Same database back end.
Yep.
So that scaled across both of those.
One other really nice thing, if you go into the standard mode, is, and this is a very new feature, and I always love to call it out. If I remember right, it's all the way down at the bottom of the screen. All the way? Are you down at the bottom?
I'm so far down.
Okay, it's not on that screen. but in any event, one of the new things that SQL Azure, or I'm sorry, Azure does support for websites is SSL. So
nice.
You actually have the ability now to upload your certificate and enable SSL for Azure websites. And that came along, I think, like 2 months ago.
Yeah, so I think what I need to do is save in standard, go to configure, and I can add that. And there's actually a few, you know, kind of steps to doing that where you need to upload a certificate and do that. But it works pretty well, and it's nice that it, you know, can handle it across multiple servers.
Absolutely.
And all that. So there we go. We've quickly deployed a site. I want to show one more thing, and this is, again, just a feature of web deploy and not just hosting on Azure, hosting anywhere, is I can go in and I want to change my index, and instead of just saying index, I want to say list of speakers, right? So I've made that change. Now I want to make this, I want to publish this. So I click on publish. It's already skipped me ahead of all my settings and connection. It knows that. And if I say start preview, this is determining the changes. So this is looking at what's on my box and in production. Now I just rebuilt, so it's got that DLL to deploy. But we don't have much else to deploy. So boom, pushes it up, done. So that's a very fast deployment. So regardless of where you're hosting, anywhere that uses, you know, that can work with, hey, somebody else posted, nice. that's dedication to type out that long password, that long URL. So so perfect. So the idea
you
there
never
is
for nothing. You might want to go ahead and pull that just in case things start going sideways in there.
Right. Yeah.
This could get away from us in a hurry.
Well, I'm not going to refresh the page, so joke's on you, people. But see there that list of, that's why I don't do AJAX. See how that works. So here a list of speakers that. Quick HTML change, publish, boom. It's differential deployment, very quick.
Yeah.
So aside from my complete, I told you I screwed up your system earlier when I brought your project over to my machine. I did all kinds of crazy stuff. And then I did some more crazy stuff over. I'm not sure what I did wrong. It was probably two lines of code that are wrong. But the point was, if you've got an 2 points, I guess I'm going to try two object lessons here. One is I would recommend starting with migrations early. If you're using Entity Framework Code first, get to migrations earlier on. If it's something that you plan to deploy, get to migrations earlier. And then you may, over time, you may have a lot of migrations and you might want to collapse that down.
Mm-hmm.
So you may want to say, I want my initial migration to do all these steps and roll it up into one. But but migrations, getting on migrations is going to make it easier to not turn your database into mush. And the second thing is, once that it was all actually set up, it was pretty quick and easy.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, and that really is the beauty of Azure. Anybody who has gone off and set everything up on their own, it's so much easier. Again, you did that in just a couple of clicks, just boom, boom, and done. That was it. Yeah, that's the beauty.
Okay. So so I think we're wrapping up on this one.
Yep, I think we did everything.
We did everything. We have one more session left. We're going to be doing the conclusion. I've been telling you to stick around. I hope you do, because this last session we're going to be talking about a lot of things. You're going to be showing off SignalR.
Yep.
I'm going to be showing Visual Studio 2013 release candidate, which just came out.
Yep.
Publicly available. Download it now. And the release is due out very soon. And then also I'll also be showing some new things with MVC 5.
Yep.
And mostly around tooling, mostly around the way it plays nicely with the whole OneASP.NET thing.
Yep.
And then also we'll be showing some resources. So we've covered tons of content today.
That's been a lot. Yes.
And so we don't want to just leave you hanging and scratching your head. We're going to point you at some other places where you can learn what we've talked about.
Yep.
All right.
In the meantime, we'll see you back here in 10 minutes.